So Travis not only helped me with the microphone, but he also teed up the next panel by talking about whether the government is up to the challenge of constant innovation. So let me just introduce, we have this next panel, and Paul Brigner is here. He's with the Internet Society. Paul has a long career in Internet policy, having worked for Verizon and the Motion Picture Association in the past. And Paul is now with ISOC, and he's also a computer engineer. So I'm really thrilled to have him. So Paul, take it away.
Thanks, Tim. It's great to be here today with this really group of esteemed technologists. I love to have tech talks, and I'm looking forward to what these gentlemen have to tell us. So I'm going to go right down the row here. We have Scott Jordan, Chief Technologist of the Federal Communications Commission. Leonard Bailey is the Special Counsel for National Security, Computer Crime, and Intellectual Property Section of the U.S. Department of Justice. And Ashkan Soltani is the Chief Technologist of the Federal Trade Commission. So thank you, gentlemen, for being here today. Before the panel, Tim Lorden and I were talking about a time when it would have been okay for a policymaker to kind of shrug off the technology question and say, well, you know, it's not quite my area of understanding, but, you know, we're going to make sure that we address this appropriately, right? Well, that's not quite a good answer anymore. You know, the policymaking process is in some ways dominated by technology questions these days, certainly with state of the net wireless, where disruption through technology kind of goes hand in hand with this whole topic. So I'm really curious to hear your description of the need for technologists being involved in the policymaking process and the role that you play. In that, clearly you're all very senior individuals in your departments or agencies. So can you first just give us an idea of how you operate and how you feel that you are needed in this role?
Yeah. So having just devoted 6 months of my life to open internet, I'm pretty sure that I can agree without any doubt that the best policy is created when technology and economics and law are integrated and are integrated seamlessly toward the policy goals. So having worked in kind of the telecoms policy space for a number of years, it seems that often the goal starts as something that's expressed by the public or is expressed through statute, and it is at a much broader level. And the technology knowledge has to come in and integrate with those other pieces in order to be able to then translate that into what the rules should be or how that should be implemented. And we've seen this again and again in a lot of these internet-related issues in recent years, and we're going to see it continuously coming up, that that you can't get really nice, effective policy unless those pieces are all integrated together.
And I'm just going to second a lot of that. So at the Department of Justice, I come from the Computer Crime and Intellectual Property section. We are the department's sort of tech-savvy lawyers. Our intent is to be able to train other prosecutors to support U.S. attorneys across the country in high-tech cases, to train investigators. And the one thing that I have seen over the years is one of the big challenges in this space, it's both in policy and in law, is the fact that for most of the public and many policymakers, everything that happens beyond the keyboard is magic. It's merely magic. And trying to get people to understand exactly how, you know, protocols work, where information is held, who has access to data, which is at the core of a lot of these policy and legal questions, is part of the challenge. And so part of what we attempt to do is to help inform that debate among policymakers, and on a sort of daily basis, on a kind of boots-on-the-ground basis, help investigators and prosecutors understand what it is we do when we go out and we search a computer or when we search a mobile device, and what are the privacy and legal implications of that, and how do they map against the laws we have.
Yeah, I think that's dead on. You know, as more of our kind of societal interactions occur mediated through technology, the need for understanding how that technology works is critical. And I think the FTC has long been looking at the way commerce occurs, you know, through technical means, and you know the latest efforts to bring more technologists is essentially a reflection of the importance of having that insight. But that doesn't say that you know the technology is the key to the policy. It's just one of the components, right? You need to understand kind of how all of them interplay. And I think the value of a kind of a technical resource working with lawyers and policymakers is to identify what is the critical piece of information that affects the policy, right? And oftentimes, you know, I'll give an example. I'm currently trying to recruit additional technologists to the agency, which is one of the most difficult challenges I think DC is facing right now. And the, you know, one of the questions that I ask is, what happens from the moment you hit the return key, as you were saying, hit the enter key, issue a search on a search engine or a website? What happens in that moment from a technical standpoint? And millions of things happen, right? From like keyboard interrupts and electrical currents to wireless signals. And the key of technology is understanding, well, in a particular regulatory framework or a particular policy decision, what is the aspect, what is the critical item that's needs to be kind of highlighted to inform the policy decision. And I think that's the key to having a technologist in this policy space.
Excellent. Thank you. You know, our last panel did a good job of teeing up this discussion for us, because I think one of Andrea's questions to Travis was, how do you keep up? And he gave a very good answer about a very long process where there's rulemaking, sometimes there's litigation, there's, you know, a long life cycle of how these technology decisions, or these decisions that involve technology, play out. So it's almost axiomatic that the decisions that are made are going to lag technology in a way. So how do you account for that when you're giving advice inside your organizations?
Sure. So I think you want policy and law to lag behind technology and society generally, right? You kind of want that lag to see how the space works out and how things kind of settle. You know, how you want innovation to occur. You want things to kind of flourish and develop, and you want the policy to address systematic issues that are not technology specific. Right. In a lot of similar environments, you see particular issues arise. That's when you start thinking, well, you know, we need to develop policy. And I think that's a good thing, because as we described, law moves very slowly, technology moves very quickly, and technology-specific legislation or regulation is often problematic because it's either obsolete by the time you've kind of brought it out, or the technology's changed to work around it. Right, and I think you kind of want it to lag, but simultaneously you want kind of policymakers, regulators, agencies to constantly be keeping abreast and having a dialogue. And I think all of our agencies do. The FTC has, you know, anytime there's a new technology kind of on the horizon, we have workshops, we invite experts, we invite companies, we invite others to kind of speak about the issues from kind of all sides of the debate. And then internally, we, of course, kind of poke at and look under the hood to see how technology works and how data flows, how notices are given, et cetera, to make sure that we understand. But I think you kind of want a balance of good grasp of the technology, good dialogue, and then regulation to follow up.
So I'm going to agree with all of that, but we'll flag that perhaps we're at Justice in a slightly different position than my colleagues here. There will be lag, and we spend a lot of time being apologetic for that in the government, but I think that's absolutely true, that there's some lag that's appropriate. In the world in which I work, you know, we have a pretty good bellwether of trends. We look at our customer base, and unfortunately in my business, the customer base are victims. So the question is, you know, what type of crime is trending? You know, we have some indication based on crime reports. What matters? Like to quote Willie Sutton, who basically it's the bank robber from the 1920s, who basically said, when he was asked, why do you rob banks? His response was, well, that's because that's where the money is. Knowing where criminals are actually active helps us target our resources, which is one more thing that I think I'd add to the list in terms of efficiency. We don't have the ability to attempt to divine every potential type of crime or every vector for criminal activity. So we need some means of determining where we should be concentrating our efforts. And you know, crime reporting is for us a very concentrated way of doing that.
So I want to actually suggest that the education piece is really multifaceted. So on one hand, so the FCC internally has the set of short courses that they do to teach the lawyers and the economists, and those tend to be very timely. I mean, it's teaching about today's technology, put it in the context of policy issues that people are working on now, right? So it's kind of a just-in-time approach in that sense. On the other hand, the lead-in question was, you know, how do you deal with Congress that only really comes and takes big bites at this, you know, once a decade, right? And there, I have a very different kind of reaction. To non-technologists, it always seems the internet is moving incredibly rapidly. I look at it as my job in the commission to be able to give a higher level, longer term view, and to make sure that what the commission does is going to have that long-term view in mind and not be outdated in any short amount of time. So an example of this in my academic hat back in my educational role, I have a slide that's 25-plus years old at this point that talks about the integration of wireline telephone and cellular and internet and cable TV. Right? And I'm still using that slide now. That kind of picture, I think, is really critical in the policymaking space to make sure that we get it right and that what we do does have the right long-lasting consequences.
Wow, I like that because I'm interested in what's next on your diagram because I'm thinking about the future and what we should all be watching. You know, I do my best to keep up with things too, and I look at drone technology, UAVs, and 3D printing. These technologies really weren't discussed much more than just a couple of years ago. And now it's DIY. You can, you know, do it at home, and I'm doing a drone project with my son, right? So where are we headed? Do you have a process for looking ahead, and can you give us some insight into where we should all be looking for these future technologies?
So within the FCC, we have something called the Technical Advisory Committee. We bring in these multi-stakeholder representation, a lot of folks from industry that are creating these and doing these. We have them come in not to talk about current proceedings, but to try to tell us kind of what should we be thinking about that we're not thinking about. We also try to have a lot of interactions going with research agencies like NSF and DARPA so that we even see further out and get an idea about what are the challenges going to be coming up.
Any other comments?
Well, I guess I'd say that, you know, we have a lot of outreach efforts that go to providers and to consumer manufacturers, and that's sort of hit or miss. We had a conference with Georgetown Law School back in December, the first time we've done this, it was Cybercrime 2020, where we tried to pull together essentially smart futurist types to talk about what they see as the future of cybercrime. And one thing that I took from that was the importance of getting people from outside your community. So within the law enforcement community, their opinions. But you know, I recall a panel in which we had a computer security researcher who called himself a hacker. We had a computer, a cybersecurity firm, a major internet telecommunications provider, and a RAND scientist. And we posed the question, so you know, what are the threats of tomorrow? And to at least my surprise, the answer actually was fairly uniform among all of them. They all thought that ransomware was in the short term something we'd see much more of. There's a wonderful business model that seems to work. And given this particular conference of mobile and wireless, I think in mobile land, it particularly would be effective in that you know, they've got the price point of about $500, $700 for the decryption key. You know, most of us would pay that. That's how much our new device is going to cost if we don't get it decrypted. But you know, this was a perspective that came from multiple different fronts that seemed to have some uniformity and you know, therefore seemed to have credibility. So I do find that you know, we live in a little bit of a bubble in the law enforcement world. Having people from outside come in and talk to us is really important.
Thank you. Please.
So I think the mention of price point is actually a good reference. I think at the end of the day, when you look at a technology, you know, drones, for example, like You ask, what does that technology change in terms of either affecting law or structures in society or costs, right? And, you know, drones do a few things, right? They make the ability to fly over places quite easy, although a drone can be a remote control car. It doesn't have to be a flying. We just have this, for some reason, you know, the little Parrot AV drones is what kind of sticks in our head. But they allow someone to remotely follow someone around, for example. So what does that change? The cost of following someone around, right? What if we sell, and we look at other environments where that's made easy, right? We look at other environments with surveillance or stalking or some other aspects that, so what happens when we take away this barrier? Or we talk about drones in the autonomous context. And what happens if you remove liability and you kind of create a structure where the operator is not present? And so while the technology has changed and they rapidly move, we have reference points for where laws have dealt with some of these things. And sometimes they're radical shifts, right? Sometimes the barriers that were, you know, we previously didn't have a kind of an example where the barrier directly over our airspace was affected. Maybe when planes started flying at a certain altitude, we started creating those laws for airspace. But this kind of is a radical shift, but it's still a shift along an axis we're familiar with. And so I think looking at that historical context, like as Scott described, and saying, like, this is how we've seen versions of this before. How are we going to approach it? And being able to distill it and identify what axes it's moving along is, I think, the key.
Interesting. You know, those last two comments kind of probably scare us all a little bit because we're facing the prospect of ransomware. We're facing the prospect of invasion of privacy potentially, and other threats. So maybe this is a good time to turn to how you're addressing concerns of consumers and what are your agencies doing to reassure consumers that they're able to use these new technologies with confidence.
Well, I probably have the easiest answer there. So our job is to go out and identify people who are violating the law and invading our privacy and taking our information and prosecute them. And our goal is to do that more efficiently and more effectively. You know, we are seeing success in the international forum. Vladimir Drinkman, who was responsible for $160 million credit card numbers that were stolen in New Jersey, is now in U.S. custody after a 2.5-year extradition fight. We're seeing more success on the international front in obtaining the person of someone who was often in Eastern Europe engaged in some type of a remote data breach. We also are doing things like the Stealth Genie prosecution in December, cell phone technology that allowed people to essentially wiretap their girlfriend's phone. Our job is fairly simple in that regard. I think much harder than the FTC. So that's essentially what the Department of Justice is doing.
Yeah, I mean, I think Travis touched on this. We have a variety of tools in the tool shed, from bringing enforcement actions to providing education to consumers to providing education and guidance to industry as they're developing some of these technologies in order to essentially ultimately maintain trust in the ecosystem, right? So you want to kind of deal with the outliers that cause the majority of kind of egregious actions and then generally try to encourage an ecosystem where there's a lot of trust and a lot of security in the platforms and in the new technologies, because ultimately when you fall outside it is when you get into these enforcement actions. But there's a lot of work that can be done both in terms of educating developers and whatnot, but also making sure consumers are aware of the bargains they're getting into or the decisions they're making to minimize kind of that surprise and shock and make sure that everyone eases along as technology moves along as well.
And I'm sure folks have noticed, right, the Open Internet Order contained transparency provisions that were really aimed at consumers. Do I understand what I'm buying? Help you understand if you are getting what you bought. Help you understand what your broadband provider's network practices are. But all of these are very consumer focused.
Excellent. One thing about drones, by the way, I just learned that there is a flight restricted zone about 9 miles all around D.C. So before you go buy that parrot drone, check out the rules on those. You know, I think there was some mention of working globally with maybe your international counterparts and making sure that you know, there's some harmony with regard to the technology positions. Can any of you comment a little bit more about how you accomplish that?
So the FCC has an international bureau that's, you know, very focused on that. On one hand, you know, the rules that the FCC does are, you know, only pertain to activity in the United States. On the other hand, as the focus increasingly becomes internet-related, you know, and the recognition is the internet is international, and this is the beauty of it, there are a lot of interactions with counterparts in other countries that are attacking similar issues. In just a couple of days, I'm going to be doing conversation on another panel with somebody from kind of the European counterpart, where they're now trying to figure out, you know, what did we do? How should they take a approach? It's a lot of communication to try to trade ideas and recognition that it all has to come together in the internet that we know and love.
So the simple answer is we work a lot with international partners, law enforcement liaisons, European Cybercrime Center, for example. We've had multiple successful operations dismantling global botnets with them. AEHH just a couple weeks ago, Game Over Zeus that dismantled CryptoLocker, that botnet. Working with those international partners, we find is critical to actually doing something as large, you know, as taking down a global botnet. The one thing I did want to comment on, though, we are doing a lot of cybersecurity work these days on the preventative side, so we're not just going after the bad guys. We're trying to work with companies on how to better protect their networks using whatever legal advice we can provide that goes to the CFAA, computer hacking statute, or the electronic surveillance statutes. But we had a conversation with industry the other day that was very interesting. While we're considering cybersecurity legislation, which seems to be moving forward, you hear the importance of getting cyber threat indicators out to companies. And one company basically informed us that they can't use cyber threat indicators because they are a multinational entity and they have to regionalize all of their use of data because of EU privacy directives. And so some of the cyber threat indicators would be considered PII in Europe. Another company piped in and said, yeah, and we use cloud computing. So we don't know exactly where our data is. So we also are not going to use cyber threat indicators because we're afraid of running afoul of the laws of another country. So it just gives you an idea of just how complicated and how important it is to try to rationalize this international scheme.
Yeah, it's extremely complicated. And, you know, the FTC has an entire Office of International Affairs that they'd be better suited to speak to kind of the cooperation in GPEN, and we do cross-border enforcement actions. But from a technologist perspective, kind of bringing it back to kind of this panel, a lot of my effort has been trying to coordinate with other technologists in other DPAs and enforcement agencies to share not just enforcement actions, but tools and understandings and analysis, so that when we're looking at new technologies or we're looking and evaluating, both from the forensics level of digging under the hood or from a kind of macro level of looking at trends, we have some kind of sharing. And what's great about that aspect of it is it's much less, it's much more academic and it's much more kind of collaborative in the same sense that, like, developing on the internet and developing shared code is collaborative, where, you know, we're all kind of looking at the same companies that are international in scale, and we're all kind of trying to come up with, you know, how do we identify, you know, what part of the elephant we're looking at and how we're feeling it and what it's like in our context.
Excellent. We just have a few minutes left. We got a little bit of a late start, so I want to give you an opportunity to ask some questions of these gentlemen. So if we can get a mic, and then if you do have any questions, please raise your hand.
Right here.
Walter.
This goes to consumer confidence. I read in a paper this over the last month or so that the majority of Americans have now been hacked. In fact, you're in the majority. The minority are those whose data is protected. And it seems arresting people who operate in Eastern Europe is not going to increase the level of security of a Target or a Home Depot or an Anthem.
the failures are more on the corporate side in terms of not stepping up to the challenge. In fact, the infamous Home Depot, we make hammers statement, belied the impact on the consumer. How do you get corporate responsibility, and how do you build consumer confidence out of that?
It's a great question. So I think data security generally is a myriad of issues from, as you described, companies or providers' roles in this space to operating systems to individual consumers. And you essentially need to raise the kind of the health of the entire ecosystem if you view it as almost like a kind of a from a healthcare model, right? So it's that the across the board you need to increase the level of resilience, right? So you need companies to incentivize data security much more, and we have a great data security program, and we bring enforcement actions. You want generally to try to avoid making the thing that's being stolen less valuable. And this is by, for example, changing the credit card system to chip and PIN or chip and sign versus just, barcodes that can be easily copied onto other cards. Trying to make consumers and individuals more aware of, phishing. A lot of the vectors for individual targeting, especially kind of high-profile ones, are phishing individuals when people get hacked or clicking on, malware or link bait kind of stuff. And kind of bringing all of those together, I think, is the key. But the FTC has this very strong data security program, and we try to provide guidance to companies. We provide enforcement actions, and we provide consumer education in this space.
So first let me say that I think, to be absolutely clear, we are not going to prosecute ourselves out of the cybersecurity challenge. I think it's important to have a credible enforcement capability. But that's not the answer itself. One of the reasons I enjoy this area is the shared complexity. Every time we talk about solutions, it invariably comes back to not one single lever we can pull, but a combination of them that involves both hardening the targets, trying to reduce the threat, trying to reduce the vulnerabilities, that spans, and this is why it's a government-wide effort, multiple agencies, multiple efforts, and the need to coordinate those efforts. Are we getting better? I maintain we are getting better. Are we good enough? Probably not. But the one thing I would say is, and I think this has to be part of the policy discussion, is a lot of what we're seeing in the cybersecurity realm is basically a manifestation of things we've always had, crime and espionage. We've always had those, and we likely always will in some form or another. This is another expression of those things. We have to get better at managing those problems, but they'll be with us for some time. So they're not just going away anytime soon.
So we have time for one more question, if anyone would like to add one more. No?
One more right there,
please.
I'd just like to ask, I think Scott and Ash Khan in particular, since you work for commissions where the deciders are, a number of different individuals and they have staff. I know at least on the FCC side, I believe they're probably all lawyers. And I'm wondering if you think it would be an improvement if each of the commissioners at the FCC and perhaps at the FTC as well had an engineer on board or a technologist of some kind who could, better interpret some of these issues and trends. Because it seems like even with the capability in the agency, it seems like it could be difficult for you to be translating to all these different decision makers.
So absolutely, yes. And they do, actually. So a number of the commissioners have very technically inclined staff that know, can dive in the weeds and take a look, both from a legal perspective, but also from a technical perspective, read API documentation, white papers, etc. Can there be more? Of course. My hope is to try to build kind of capacity at the agency in this new research office, and the office is designed to not just do research, but to also educate and inform through regular kind of kind of regular trainings, regular papers, as well as one-on-one analysis. So, yes, and one of the things, one of the kind of just to, this dovetails on another issue, but, you know, this is the technologist panel and whatnot, but I kind of hate this divide of technologists and lawyers. Like, I know a bit of law enough to be, like, dangerous on a certain kind of context, and I work with a lot of really smart lawyers that know enough technology based on, they might not know how the interrupts work on a computer motherboard, but they know enough technology related to their field of law to actually get in it. And a lot of, I think, what technologists can do is strengthen that understanding and give a confidence to let people know, you know, I use this example all the time, you know, you don't need to know how to take apart your motor to know what part of it's wrong, right? Whether you get a flat tire, where you're running out of gas, or you need windshield wiper fluid. And I think a lot of it is also giving the backbone and confidence to the individuals at the agency to dive into the technology and not kind of dispel it as, I'm not a technologist, so I'm not going to look at it.
Yeah, and, you know, speaking purely for myself, not for the commission, so, yeah, my individual answer, definitely, yes. Kind of, in some sense, ending where we started, you know, there was a day when it was off the view of many that there were just these little itty-bitty parts that are these ungory technical stuff that, you know, we don't understand and have to reach out to the technologist for, and that is long gone. And there's a really large subset of these issues where there's a technical component and definitely a legal component, an economic component. And so we need to create structures where all of those are considered and integrated, right? And so while the FCC's commissioner staffs are very small and they don't have those people on their staffs, I mean, this is one of my job, is to be there as a resource for them, you know, in a completely nonpartisan way, to be able to answer any questions that they have and help them develop their own opinions about where they want to land on any issue that comes before them.
It's a great way to wrap up. I want to thank you all for your service, and thank you for being on this panel.